I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm at Symphony Hall with Betsy Jolas. And Betsy, you're here for the American premiere of your new piece, Letters from Bachville. Thank you for a little bit of your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here and again to be played by the BSO.
Well, I'm curious about your initial thoughts when this commission came to you, and whether knowing that it was coming as a joint commission from the BSO and from the Gewandhaus Orchestra, were there immediate musical thoughts that you had, or did you need to take a little time to absorb what this project might be in order to find the voice that you would eventually find in the piece?
Well, actually, I couldn't believe it when the commission news came to me. I thought it was a dream, you know, and then when I realized, the first thing that struck me was that I was going to be played in Leipzig. I had been in Berlin, and which is very close from Leipzig, but I'd never been there. And we musicians think of Leipzig as really as Bach's town. And so the idea of walking into that city and sort of treading on Bach's own footsteps, I thought this was absolutely amazing, and the first thing I did, I told my daughter, I've just finished the piece. I went into my room and sketched it out completely. It was all about Bach. Of course, I didn't keep anything that I had written that day. But the idea of centering this piece around my memories of Bach came right away. That was the first thing. I didn't call it Bachville right away. But I did look for a name that rang a bell in America, thinking it was going to be played in Boston also, you know. I didn't want to use Leipzig, but I made this up, you know. I said they have Nashville, they have all kinds of cities, and some people, in fact, have quoted my title wrong, called it Nashville, which I found a little aggravating, but. Finally, I think people are understanding. However, there's a part of my piece that I'm not sure I've made clear, because it's not only my great memories of Bach, it's also the way people listen to him today, which is very economical, shall we say. Just the first few notes of famous pieces, and that's enough. Then you turn it off and you go to something else. That's where people listen to music, you see. So I decided I was going to also play around with that idea of playlists. So I have my Bach playlists, and at one point there's the famous St. George Chorale is stopped. It's stopped with the percussion. It's just like what we're hearing now. It's very strange. People have not realized that. They have noticed a lot of the things that appear in that piece, because it's full of Bach all over. There's just one little passacaglia of mine, but just writing a passacaglia is like thinking of Bach also. Yeah. So I'm surprised that the people have noticed, have not realized. Also, I have used his signature all over the place. Several aspects of that. In other words, B flat, A, C, B natural. Yes, yes. That happens all the time. It happens right from the beginning with solo violins. Huh? I like to sign this throughout the piece. It comes back several times. So I don't know if people really understand what I'm trying to do. It's kind of scary. because the pieces, the quotations are very short,
but recognizable.
Not all of them.
Okay.
I don't think people have recognized. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah, yeah. That's okay, because sometimes I've changed the intervals also. I have not kept them absolutely identical. So I guess what I've tried to do, I've done it, but I don't know whether it's viable yet. People seem to have reacted positively to at least the first performances. I don't know what it's going to be like here. It's a different public. So I'm curious. I'm not scared. I'm curious. Yeah.
This strikes me, though, that you have this incredibly long, rich career as a composer, and you speak about this like it's a brand new experience, that people are going to hear this, and you don't know what's going to happen, and you're kind of excited. Do I detect a tiny bit of worried about it, but mostly just excited to hear what people will say about this? And here you are, even at this stage in your career, this is like new to you.
Yes, I am strange from that standpoint. I'm still trying things I've never done before. There's nothing secure about it. I never feel secure. I get bored when I write the same old things, you know. And I've done that all my life. And that's why I need at least a year or two more so I can try a few more things that I've never done.
So when someone who doesn't know music by Betsy Jolas well, or maybe this is even the very first thing they've heard from you, when they hear this, they will hear things that they wouldn't hear in any of your other work.
They will both hear things they've never heard and things that they have heard.
Okay.
Yeah. I think at this point, even I can say that. I mean, even if I'm trying new things, there are things that remain. I wouldn't say pleased with the piece, but I think the piece is finished when I recognize myself.
Oh wow, that's a great concept. That's a great idea. Tell me, building on that, describe how your music has evolved over the decades. I just mentioned before we turned the recorder on that I heard Little Summer Suite. The BSO did it at Tanglewood. We heard it on the radio. And the Berlin Philharmonic premiered it a little bit before that. So this is recent music. If we were to go back to the 1970s or the 1950s or 60s, would we hear something of the same Betsy Jolas, or would we hear something really different?
You'd hear a younger Betsy Jolas. A little more complex. I've become a little simpler. I've become a little more practical, I think. I mean, in fact, to come back to Tanglewood, I had a piece played there. My first orchestral piece was played there. Tales of a Summer Sea in the 70s, precisely, 77. And I listened to it recently. I was asked to give a recording to somebody, and I said, oh my, how complicated I was at the time. But I still like it, you know? This is getting old, getting reasonable, getting peaceful, maybe a little more, yeah.
So it's really a reflection of who you are, that complexity comes with midlife, mm-hmm. and simplicity comes with age. Do I hear you saying this?
Well, I heard Sir Simon Rattle say something about being wise when you get old, and he said something very 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 lovely about my music, the piece that he conducted. He said that only a person my age could have written a piece like that. So he said something like that. Not his own words, but something like that. I found this extremely touching.
That's beautiful. That really is beautiful. Going further back, can you identify the time when you knew that composing would be your path? Is that something you can put a marker on or describe?
It took a long time for all kinds of reasons. I mean, I always say that, and people say, oh no, don't say that. I was not a very gifted child. I wondered whether I could be a composer. I wanted to be one. I worshipped composers. I mean, I read about composers and how they had to be. I always tell this stupid story. When I was invited to dinner when I was about 15 in New York with Stravinsky. And yes, I was lucky. I knew Stravinsky was a great composer. To me, a composer had to be great from morning to night. I mean, the minute he got out of bed. Yeah? And imagine my horror when Stravinsky, throughout the dinner, talked about his stomach trouble. Imagine this young girl wanting to be a composer and looking at this great composer talking about his stomach trouble. Yeah. I got over that because at the end of the meal, he talked about his mass.
Oh, that's an amazing piece, the mass. I love that piece.
Marvelous piece. This is just about the time when he's writing it, I believe. Yes, yes. I'm talking about the years of the warriors.
Yeah, right. In the 1940s, he wrote that piece,
that's
I think.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And so that was a great experience. My first discovery of today's music, I call it, was Honegger. I began singing in the Dessau choirs in 1940, yes, 41. And I discovered at practically at the same time there were two concerts being prepared. One was Lassus, and Lassus has been my mentor for years and years and years. Still, today, I'm still working with him. And the other one was Honegger. And we were singing Nicolas de Flux. Nobody knows that piece, but it's sort of a sister piece with Roy David. And so I wanted to study only with him. And I studied with him for a while.
Okay. Yeah.
He died pretty soon, unfortunately. And I didn't want to study with Mio or with Messiaen. I studied with both.
Right. Of course, yes. These are the names that jump out, yeah.
In fact, I became Messiaen's assistant. The composition teacher was Mio, and then we got along wonderfully, yeah, wonderfully. And Messiaen was teaching at the same time he was teaching analysis. It was a very strange situation. I have a feeling of having two teachers at the same time. And it worked out, and they didn't like each other so much.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I don't think so, no.
But did you find that your work with each of them, along with Honegger, left you with something really substantial that you carried forward?
In a way, I was finding my own way.
Yes.
I was interested in the domaine musical of Boulez at the time. I met him. He was famous. I was a sort of late bloomer, starting to study again. You know, I thought I had finished when I came back to France, and then it turned out that I had to continue, and I entered the conservatory, and that was very, very difficult. Very difficult.
For what reason?
Because the system is completely different. It's very, especially at the time, it was very rigorous. I mean, we weren't allowed to use a piano in exams, you know?
And I guess a lot of solfège.
Yeah. And that I had to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
I never done that.
Yeah, no, I've had that experience of trying to learn solfège. It's really, really difficult.
That.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. But was any aspect of this, and I hear you referring to times in your life through these decades, I don't hear you initially bringing up the fact of your being a woman, and which is fine, but how do you factor that into your life and your career? In what way did that have any effect at all?
In a few words, because I've dealt with that problem very often. Yes, it was a problem. I mean, in my generation, I was alone, practically.
Did you ever seek out or find any other woman composer out of sheer solidarity?
No.
Okay.
I mean, all the women composers I could hear about, I didn't want to hear about. I didn't like their music, and I don't want to name anybody, but I had no role model, as they say, you know? And the result was that I was always alone, and after a while I took it in my stride, and that was it, you know. But for instance, when I started teaching at the conservatory, I had my own class. My class was made up of boys. The girls didn't want to come with me; they went with the boys. It was very strange. And one day I said, "Why don't you bring your girlfriends? I'm a little bored." Yeah. Well, it's strange. And most of my friends, even my younger friends, I mean, I was always older than my friends. I had 10 years difference, which made for a little more experience, a different experience, shall we say. I had already a certain way of writing with that I didn't want to change. My ears were open to everything happening, and a lot was happening at the time. And very soon in the game, I was interested in the domaine musical, Boulez's domaine musical, but I didn't take everything I heard. But I was played there, and that's where I wanted to be played, because that's the only place where pieces were really played the way they should, you know, because the rest was not very good. And I was conscious of that. I always tell the story of a conductor who got lost in one of my pieces. So maybe it was my fault, but sometimes I wonder.
Well, when one reads your biography, you just can't help but be struck by the environment in which your parents constructed your life as a young girl. And I know that for a young girl, if Matisse is in the house or Ernest Hemingway is around, did that environment with the journal your parents were publishing, the work I guess your mother was a singer and translator.
Yeah, and that was very important for me.
Yeah. Did that environment, not just what your parents did for a living, but the circles that they were in, how did that shape your view of yourself in the world?
It certainly shaped it. I mean, if I had told them I wanted to be a banker or a businesswoman, I don't think they would have liked it. But I never asked them, you know. It just didn't enter my mind. However, I didn't know what I wanted to be, but I hesitated between painting, dancing, writing. But composer, I had no model in my family. Everybody was very respectful of music, and my mother was very musical. She had studied singing in Berlin, after all. This Louisville girl studied in Berlin, can you imagine? So she brought not only, that was very important in my life too, in my style even. She brought not only the leaders that she learned in Berlin in 1912, but also all the Negro spirituals, as we called them then. I don't think you can say that today, can you?
I don't know what the right terminology is, but I know what you're talking about. So she was, you said, from Louisville? She was from Kentucky? Yeah.
She was in Kentucky, yeah. And so she could learn anything she heard. She had a wonderful ear. She played the piano, she played the guitar, and she learned songs from everywhere. And so her repertoire was absolutely gigantic, and she sang all the time. I mean, even when she was not at the piano, she sang while she cooked. She sang while she wrote. She was amazing. And besides that, she was a very bright, wonderful woman. Very well organized. And she had a school at one point. She was able to take us out of France after the defeat, which was not easy. Yeah. No, she was a fantastic woman, and she helped my father with his magazine. She did a great many of the translations into English, and she became a very well known translator. She translated all of Nathalie Sarraute's work. All. She translated Bachelard. Very very difficult writers.
Sure. Yeah.
And so. She was quite something.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, yeah. No, it's an environment.
So my father, in another way.
And that's the thing, that one sees your biography and is just so intrigued by that environment in Paris with these characters around and the interesting work that your parents are doing, and I understand the idea that for whatever the right word is, let's say conventional career, may not have ever occurred to you.
But you know, when I think back, actually I was conscious of what they were doing. I could see the magazine, you know, sometimes in the house. And I thought they were crazy. I was very conservative as a little girl. You know,
really?
Children are sometimes, yes. They're not avant-garde. I remember when the World Welfare 1937 came, I was 12 something, so they got me all dressed up and they sent me to a concert, to a ballet. And it was Millau's music, Le Train Bleu, and it was Picasso had done the costumes and the scenery. I hated it.
You're describing something that to me sounds like a dream, but you're...
It was torture for me. I thought that was the most awful thing I had seen. Yeah? You see, so I wasn't ready for avant-garde at that point at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then came this experience with music of the Renaissance.
When you were in the United States during the war, I think, you sang in a choir that right. took on...
Even before that, there was this famous recording by Nadia Boulanger of Monteverdi, which impressed me greatly. Yeah. I can't forget that. It was very special because she was performing this with piano, not no harpsichord, you know, and a double bass instead of a viola da gamba, you know. But it was so beautiful. To me, it was a revelation. I can't forget that. I discovered that music together with Debussy and of course, being in New York in the 40s was exciting for anybody who was, for whom music was so important. I lived in a state of elation, continual. I started buying my scores, went to Toscanini rehearsals, you know, heard Bartok play, heard Bruno Walter. That's my generation, you see.
Wow. Yeah. Well, coming back to today, and here we are with Letters from Bachville. I love the note that you wrote about Letters
That's
from
true.
Bachville,
yes.
and so I can't resist asking. I mean, now did you go to Leipzig for the premiere? And,
yes,
and,
I did.
And tell me about whether Leipzig kind of lived up to your dream of what you thought that would be like to walk around the Thomaskirche or anywhere else in that city.
I was moved to sit in the Thomaskirche, although the Thomaskirche doesn't look like it used to.
No.
But just being there it was impressive. And then there's the museum, Bach Museum, right next door, and seeing the manuscripts is pretty wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And then, but it was not only Bach. Part of my family was there. We went to Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn and Schumann's apartment. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I got dressed up. Took photos.
You That's remember, great.
Have you been there?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, yeah.
You remember the room where they have a sort of a concert?
Yes. Yes.
Painted on the wall, and you get all dressed up, and you have your
yes. Exactly, exactly. Well, let me ask you this then. I mean, now you walked through the streets of Leipzig, you stepped into the Thomaskirche in the condition it is now, which is beautiful, but not exactly the way Bach knew it. But still, did it change anything about then how you hear yourself Letters from Bachville?
Probably, yes. I can't tell really because I had never heard it before.
Okay, that's fair. It was the first time it was played.
That's right. Yeah. What I just told Anne-Marie was that it sounds very different here. Of course, they're still working on it, but it sounds very different here. I mean, some things are better and something is worse, but it's going to change.
So, it will. It will. Yeah.
It will. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Had you been to Symphony Hall before?
I had indeed, but I had never been played there.
But you've never been played here. Yes. Yes. Well, this is exciting.
Exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Betsy Joels, I feel like I could just talk to you all day. We'll stop here, but I really appreciate your time today. I love this piece, and it's thrilling for me. If I heard the piece?
Yes.
I heard the piece when the Gewandhaus Orchestra did it, because they live streamed it, and I listened on the internet.
Ah, you did.
And then I just heard a little bit of rehearsal, too.
I see. Well, it made sense to you.
I mean, as much as any new piece can, I don't want to say that any brand new piece completely makes sense to me, because I don't see through everything that clearly and quickly, but I hear what's going on. And actually, what I had not known when I heard the Gewandhaus premiere was the note that you wrote. And so what you wrote made it a richer experience.
It does help. I insisted with the French radio was taking it. I insisted on giving them a note because nobody was giving my note to anybody.
It was a wise decision. Well, again, thank you so much. It's just such an honor to meet you and to talk with you. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.